This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
In every investigation, police have to rely on a variety of information, from direct evidence to circumstantial evidence, and sometimes even eyewitnesses. In the Jennifer Harris case, there was no shortage of people in the small town of Bonham, Texas, willing to talk.
This information was brought to me through channeling it through Jennifer. This is more like a medium.
But not all sources are created equal.
I stepped out on the front porch, and I looked toward the road, and I said, Jennifer, driving her Jeep.
Did someone in Bonham know something more about Jennifer's disappearance and death? And could their statements lead law enforcement down a new trail that would solve her murder?
She was hysterical, she was frustrated, and she was extremely angry.
Join me for a special two-part episode as we try to discover what happened to Jennifer Harris and who is responsible for her death. From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, Season 2, The Life and Death of Jennifer Harris, Episode 8, Eyewitnesses, Part 1. I'm your host, Claire Santama. Thanks for listening. One of the hardest parts in any criminal investigation is deciding who to believe. In the Jennifer Harris case, authorities had honed in on two persons of interest early on. James Hamilton, Jennifer's ex-boyfriend.
Am I considered a suspect at this point?
And Rob Holman, Jennifer's ex-husband.
She asked me if I had told my girlfriend yet. I said no, because I didn't even know for sure that she was pregnant.
Neither James nor Rob have accepted my request for interviews on this podcast, but in interviews with law enforcement, both men denied harming Jennifer or having any role in her disappearance and death. The two men in Jennifer's life in May 2002 couldn't have been more different, physically and emotionally. Rob Holman has been described as a good old country boy. He liked to drive around back roads, listen to country music, drink beer, hunt, fish, and work with his hands.
Seemed to be like just a good old boy. He liked to drink beer, and he liked a record store, I believe, where he could go and find hard to find music. It could be anything from like bluegrass to just kind of like Texas country or Bob Dylan kind of stuff.
As an avid beer drinker, Rob had the physique to match. He was soft around the edges and had a belly that hung over his belt buckle. James Hamilton, meanwhile, was described as a Kid Rock type, a skinny hippie with long hair he usually wore in a ponytail.
He kind of was like a Kid Rock look, not like the clean-cut person that she's always, you know, had around. And he seemed shy, number one, but also a little mysterious to me. He was very intelligent, I can tell you that. He had some issues.
Yeah.
With paranoia, maybe. I know that he did serve in the military. He did have some PTSD from that.
After the military, James had worked in the medical field and as a massage therapist. In his spare time, he liked to ride motorcycles and go camping, hobbies he says he shared with Jennifer. The audio here is a little rough, but this is James telling investigators back in 2002 that he and Jennifer both liked motorcycles and had rented Harley Davidsons and taken them driving on the back roads in Fannin County one 4th of July.
Jennifer and I both like motorcycles. We rented a Harley Davidson and go out here on the back roads for that 4th of July.
Besides a love of the outdoors, about the only other thing James and Rob had in common was their volatile relationship with Jennifer Harris. Both men had had their ups and downs with Jennifer, and admitted to occasions where their arguments had resulted in physical violence. For his part, Jennifer's ex-husband Rob admitted to slapping Jennifer in the heat of an argument.
Had a big argument then. I think I slapped her that night.
And James told investigators that they'd gotten in physical confrontations at the apartment they shared in Frisco.
One of our physical confrontations. She came and kicked the door and grabbed my arms around her to carry her out of the apartment. She was fighting with me the whole way.
Considering all the turmoil in her life, initially, authorities thought Jennifer could have taken off on her own accord and perhaps had fallen victim to her own demons.
We don't even know what's going on. You know, she might have took off, whatever.
But when Jennifer's body was discovered in the Red River, her autopsy revealed she had suffered a violent and unnatural death.
The circumstances around her death are extremely unusual and suspicious. There was no evidence of a natural disease process and no toxicological explanation for her death.
The condition of Jennifer's body, including the fact that she was stripped naked, had a wound to her right eye, and didn't have water in her lungs, led to the medical examiner's homicide determination. For all the confusion and chaos, one thing was crystal clear. Someone had murdered Jennifer Harris and thrown her body into the Red River. And to get to the bottom of the case, investigators had to keep pounding the pavement and asking tough questions. This is Lieutenant Mike McClellan, one of the lead investigators on Jennifer's case.
It's a crazy puzzle, but we put the puzzle together eventually, okay? We have not got one homicide in this county or missing person we have not solved.
Lieutenant McClellan called Jennifer's case a crazy puzzle, and that description is certainly one that fits. There are so many pieces of information that come into play, and it can be hard to know what details to hone in on and which ones to cast aside. As it turns out, one of those potential puzzle pieces came from Lieutenant McClellan's own life. His wife, Sharon Summers. She walked right into the Fannin County Sheriff's Office in 2005, wanting to talk.
And I'm Kelly Warren, the Bonham Police Department.
Investigator Rick Miller, Fannin County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah, I'm Sharon Summers.
Okay.
Let's touch on a little background. Mike McClellan at the time was an investigator for the Sheriff's Office here. And y'all were living together?
We were married.
You were married. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sharon went on to say that her husband typically didn't share much information at all with her about his work.
The first time that I'd heard about the Jennifer's case was through Michael. And this was extremely limited information. Michael did not share anything with me. Business-wise or personal. He'd always been a withdrawn individual, very reluctant to share even his innermost feelings.
Sharon told Detective Warren that she had information to share about the Jennifer Harris case that she'd gotten from Jennifer herself by supernatural means.
This information was brought to me through channeling it through Jennifer. This is more like a medium. Shortly after her disappearance, Jennifer came crashing into me. She was hysterical, she was frustrated, and she was extremely angry. She was to the point where I had to calm her down several times just to even get her to make sense.
Just to be clear, Lieutenant Mike McClellan's wife, Sharon, is claiming she had a vision of Jennifer Harris that she channeled as a medium while Jennifer was already a missing person.
She was giving me a description of the individual that was being interviewed on that day at that specific time. The individual would be a man in his early 30s, approximately 200-220 pounds, short, medium brown hair, stocky, with a belly that hung over his pants slightly. This individual, according to her, was only telling you part of the truth in that interview. And she then began to try to explain what was going on in the interview, brought the information immediately to Michael when he came home from work that day.
Okay.
And he was horrified.
Okay.
He didn't take it very well. He wanted to know how I knew the information that I knew, and that if his office was bugged. Wanted to know if I had known any of these individuals before, and he began to start interviewing me.
Okay. So what did you get from her?
Sharon said she channeled Jennifer for several hours, and in a vision, Jennifer divulged a number of details to her.
The way she put it was that she got caught at her own game.
Sharon said in this vision she had, Jennifer told her that she'd met up with an individual that she knew on the back roads of Bonham, and she'd gotten into his truck to go driving around. According to Sharon, Jennifer told her that there was a second man in the truck who handed her a wine cooler and instructed her to drink it. In this vision, Sharon said Jennifer drank 2 bottles of alcohol before meeting a violent end at the hands of 2 men near the Red River Bridge.
She drank 2 of those bottles in the course of getting to the bridge on 78 and the Red River. There was something that was put in that bottle and then handed over to her, because it was an open bottle when she received it. They stopped on the Texas side in the park rest area. At that point, she was intoxicated to the point where she could barely stand up. She was losing her balance. She was disoriented and didn't know where she really was. The driver stayed in the vehicle. The one from the back seat got out and pulled her by her hair and started roughing her up. They did not strike her, but he grabbed her by her neck and pulled her hair to threaten her.
So he grabbed her by her neck?
Yes.
Okay.
Grabbed her hair, grabbed by the neck.
By the front of her neck.
By the front of her neck.
According to Sharon's vision, the killers then disposed of Jennifer's body in the Red River. No matter what you might believe about the supernatural or psychic mediums or the ability to channel spirits from the other side, it's hard to get around one simple fact when considering whether or not to believe Sharon's account. Jennifer Harris did not have any alcohol in her system when her body was found in the Red River. Her toxicology report was clean for all substances, including drugs and alcohol. I'm more of a straight shooter when it comes to witness believability, and to me, Sharon the psychic medium, who just happens to be married to a key investigator at the sheriff's office, probably got a lot more information through osmosis than any supernatural means. Pillow talk seems higher on the probability scale than a vision from beyond the grave, but take Sharon's statement for what you will. Claire Sanima here, host of Final Days on Earth. Let's talk about your best defense for the unexpected. are you prepared if the unthinkable happens? If a medical emergency arises, Air Medcare Network provides members with world-class emergency air transport services to the nearest hospital with no out-of-pocket expenses. Join today and never pay a dime for your medical flight when flown by an AMCN provider. Insurance doesn't always cover the full cost of a medical emergency, so this is a great way to secure financial peace of mind. Memberships cost as little as $85 a year for your entire household. And right now, as a listener of my show, you'll get up to a $50 Visa or Amazon gift card with a new membership. Visit airmedcarenetwork.com/final and use offer code FINAL. No matter where you're at the game of life, an Air Medcare Network membership is the protection no one should live without. Sharon Summers is far from the only person in Bonham who came forward and shared information with the sheriff's office in Jennifer's case. And some of those witnesses had a lot stronger connection to the case than a self-proclaimed psychic ability. In previous episodes, we touched on the fact that law enforcement said they had a witness who placed Rob and Jennifer together on Sunday, May 12th, on the side of the road. This is from Rob's 2002 interview at the Fannin County Sheriff's Office.
Mr. McClellan has talked to a witness that places you and her together on
Sunday.
I wasn't with her on this side of the road. I wasn't with her Sunday.
Of course, it's important to remember that law enforcement can lie during interviews with potential suspects. It's one of the rules of engagement that police officers are afforded while investigating a crime. Detective Warren doesn't name this alleged witness who places Rob and Jennifer together on the side of the road Sunday, but there are clues that this isn't merely a bluff. As we first reported in Episode 2, Missing, Sheriff's Deputy Rush Smith wrote in his report that multiple residents had reported seeing Jennifer's Jeep parked on County Road 2610 on previous occasions. And in a separate report, another unnamed witness who lives off County Road 2610 told authorities that they'd seen, quote, a chubby white male talking to Jennifer on the side of the road on Sunday. It's one thing to bluff a potential suspect in the interview room, and it's another to put down in writing in multiple reports that these witnesses exist. From the best I can tell, this wasn't an interrogation tactic. It was real intelligence. Remember, County Road 2610, behind Lake Bonham, is where Jennifer's Jeep was found, locked, and abandoned. The location of the Jeep is one of the few concrete pieces of evidence that investigators have about Jennifer's final actions on Earth. Jennifer's sister Alyssa says she knew that Rob and Jennifer had met out at Lake Bonham in the past.
When she moved back to Bonham, I just asked if she'd seen or heard from Rob at all, and she said, yeah, we talk all the time. I asked her if she ever saw Rob or met up with Rob, and she told me that that's where they would meet up.
Lake Bonham was where they would meet up?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And another location that was nearby the vehicle was the Lake Bonham Hoedown. Were you familiar with that venue? Had you ever been there? Had Jennifer ever talked about going there?
No, not specifically the Hoedown. Like, she never told me, yeah, I went to the Hoedown. But just the general area, when I first heard of the Hoedown, and I said, well, where is that? And found out that it was in that specific area of Lake Bonham, then it kind of rang a bell. I thought, oh, well, that's where, you know, she probably would drive around or meet up with him.
In his interviews with police, Rob Holman has always maintained he did not meet Jennifer in person on Sunday. He says they spoke on the phone several times Sunday morning, and around 8 p.m., he passed her Jeep at the intersection of Highway 78 and 898 in Bonham. That's just a stone's throw away from County Road 2610.
The four-way stop there. So then I turned over, she was in front of me. And I saw her Jeep turn.
Which direction was she headed?
I was going to go buy some beer.
Going north.
Right.
Because Fannin County was dry in 2002, the quickest way to get beer was to drive north to the border with Oklahoma, across the Red River. Authorities checked Rob's story about going to buy beer on that Sunday evening. They talked to the owner of the first gas station on the Oklahoma side, and he knew Rob Holman as a frequent customer. But according to a report, the owner told investigators that he didn't remember Rob coming in on Mother's Day at all. Rob would later say that he actually didn't stop for beer or gas during his five-hour-long solo drive in the country on the night Jennifer disappeared.
Where'd you pick up your beer at?
I didn't end up not getting any there. So I was going to go get some, and I decided not to.
Shortly after Jennifer's Jeep passed Rob's truck at the highway intersection near County Road 2610 on Sunday evening, someone a neighbor described as a chubby white male met Jennifer behind Lake Bonham. In June 2022, I went out to the scene where Jennifer's Jeep was found with former Fannin County investigator Daryl Parker.
The person who called Jennifer Harris's Jeep in the next morning, right? There's an abandoned Jeep out here. Well, turns out that she had seen the Jeep the night before, after Jennifer was gone. So she's an important witness, but she has always been unwilling to say if she saw anyone. And I have pretty good information that says that she does know. She doesn't want to come forward with it.
I noticed in some of the reports on the case, different Fannin County investigators at the time in 2002, you know, they would note that, quote, several residents in the area said they had seen Jennifer's Jeep parked in the same location previously.
Right.
And then other, you know, witnesses, unnamed, but in the report, witnesses said they saw a chubby white male talking to Jennifer in this location.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, you know, who could that be? Who fits that description? Chubby white male that Jennifer knows.
I think
could be lots of people, but certainly if you're looking at James Hamilton and Rob Holman, James Hamilton is a skinny guy with a ponytail.
Yeah.
Rob Holman is much more aptly described as a chubby white male.
To be clear, Rob has always maintained that he did not meet Jennifer at all on May 12th. And no one has officially identified him by name as the chubby white male seen with Jennifer on the side of the road in any records that I have seen. As I pored over Jennifer's case file, I came across a new witness who I'd never heard of before. Someone close to the Harris family, who came forward with information 2 years after Jennifer's death. Roger Harris, one of Jennifer's uncles, who lived in Bonham, approached Fannin County investigators in 2004 with an unsolicited tip about one of their top persons of interest, James Hamilton, Jennifer's ex-boyfriend. The audio here is a little rough, so let me walk you through what we're about to hear. Roger Harris has called the Fannin County Sheriff's Office to arrange to come in and share information about Jennifer's case. Investigators first ask him how he knew James, and Roger says the first time he met James was at a Thanksgiving dinner at his sister's house.
The first time I met James was at a Thanksgiving dinner at my sister's house.
The sheriff's deputies asked if Roger knew what James looked like, and if he saw him today, would he recognize him? Roger says that he would. Then the deputy asked Roger what kind of vehicle James drives, and Roger was able to identify it as a new Dodge Dakota King Cab, blue in color.
Occasions when you've seen James, you know what kind of vehicle he drives. He was driving a new Dodge Dakota King Cab, blue.
With the identifications out of the way, the deputy asked Roger the million-dollar question. Had Roger seen Jennifer or James on the evening she disappeared?
The evening that Jennifer disappeared, did you happen to see her or him? Yes, sir. I stepped out on the front porch, and I looked toward the road, and I seen Jennifer driving her Jeep.
In case you didn't catch that, Roger says that on the night that Jennifer disappeared, he was on his front porch and saw Jennifer driving her green Jeep. It's worth noting that Roger says the Jeep had a beige top, while Jennifer's Jeep actually had a black top. What Roger said next was even more eyebrow-raising. Roger told the deputy that he not only saw who he believed was Jennifer driving north, but 10 seconds later, he thinks he saw James following right behind her.
I turned to my wife and I said, "There goes going north." 10 seconds later, I seen James following right behind her.
Authorities wanted to be sure that Roger was recalling the correct day, Sunday, May 12th, 2002. So they asked him again. This is on the evening that she actually disappeared? Roger says yes, and he even remembers the time, 10 minutes until 8 o'clock. He remembered the time because his wife was watching, quote, the show.
This is on the evening that she actually disappeared. Do you know what time of day that was?
It was 10 minutes to 8. My wife was watching the show, and I just stepped out of the house.
These deputies didn't press Roger on what show his wife was watching, but considering it was Sunday night and he called it the show, odds are good that it was The Sopranos, the wildly popular HBO drama series that dominated the ratings in 2002. We know The Sopranos was on TV at Rob Holman and Sarah Beth's house from 7 to 8 p.m., and the end of the episode was used to mark the time that Rob left to go driving. And remember, 8 p.m. was the same time that Jennifer reportedly exclaimed to her friend Christy Farr that she needed to go meet someone. But according to Roger Harris, it was someone fitting the description of James Hamilton, not Rob Holman, who was following closely behind what he thought was Jennifer's Jeep. The deputy asked Roger if he waved or said anything to Jennifer as she passed him.
Did you say anything when you saw them? They wave or anything at all? Did anybody else see them go by that you're aware of? Or did you speak to anyone about them going by?
No, I just told my wife that that wasn't Jennifer going north.
So you did tell your wife?
Yes,
but she didn't see him?
No.
The deputy wanted to know if Roger was sure that it was James that he saw. He asked him what would be distinctive about James other than knowing his pickup truck and knowing him on sight. Roger said the key feature was James's hair being pulled back into a ponytail.
What would be distinctive about James other than knowing his pickup and knowing him on sight that made you believe it was James?
I mean, the times I've seen James, he always had his hair pulled back into a ponytail.
And that's the way he had it that day,
yes.
That you recall?
Yes,
okay.
Roger went on to say that he remembered telling his brother, Jerry Harris, Jennifer's dad, about this sighting while she was still missing. but he was instructed not to discuss the case with anyone outside the family. And Roger never told anyone else about it for 2 years, until he called the Fannin County Sheriff's Office in 2004.
Did you speak to anyone about that, or let them know what your thoughts were on it? Or did your wife say anything to you about it, you know, since you told her you had seen him all so y'all never discussed it? Not even among yourselves?
Several days later, Jerry came up and said, don't discuss this case with anybody outside of the family. Mm-hmm. So I haven't said anything since then.
Roger Harris's eyewitness statement is certainly a piece of evidence that raises a lot of questions. However, it also has some holes. We already know the Jeep's description was a bit off. Roger saw a beige top on a green Jeep, when we know that Jennifer's Jeep has a black top. In addition, the timeline Roger gave contradicts James's alibi for Sunday evening, when James says he was eating dinner at McDonald's in a Dallas suburb more than an hour away from Bonham. And James's alibi was confirmed by two witnesses, his friend David Chieb, who was dining with him, and David's wife Irene, who corroborated the account. All three people, James, David, and Irene, recalled the time as around 7 to 8 p.m. on Sunday, May 12th, when David and James were at McDonald's. They remembered leaving the restaurant at 8:10 p.m. to get David's kids ready for bed. James can't be in two places at once, and while three witnesses seem to outweigh Roger's lone account of James being in Bonham around 8 p.m. Sunday, there is still room for doubt. People's memories can be faulty, and dates and times can get mixed up. In fact, the first time James was asked about his activities on the weekend that Jennifer went missing, he said after a long day of roofing with David, they went to McDonald's for dinner on Friday, not Sunday. The audio here is a little rough, but you're about to hear James tell investigators, "I think I got the dates confused."
On Sunday, like I said, I think I got the dates confused. We finished the roof that day, and then his daughters wanted to go to McDonald's.
The best way to corroborate a witness statement or an alibi is with physical evidence that can't change. Evidence like surveillance video. Here again is Daryl Parker.
I believe the alibi, unfortunately, you know, law enforcement at the time didn't go down to the McDonald's and collect any security video. They could have proven the alibi up, which is what they should have done. That wasn't done.
Remember, the Sunday night that Jennifer went missing was also Mother's Day. It struck me as odd that David, a father of four, would have spent the entire holiday working on a roof and then taken his daughters to McDonald's on Mother's Day without their mother. This kind of conundrum, which witness to believe, is what juries are often faced with, and if Jennifer's case ever goes to trial, it's one of the key decisions they would have to make. As I looked for any other connections between James Hamilton and Bonham during the time of Jennifer's disappearance, I was drawn to a statement from Patrick Farr, a friend of the Harris family. If you recall, Jennifer was visiting Christy Farr, Patrick's wife, on the night she went missing to get a chicken spaghetti recipe. Patrick told authorities that he went to sleep shortly after Jennifer came by that evening, and he didn't see her leave. But Patrick took an interest in Jennifer's disappearance, and he and his wife were among the attendees gathered at Grandma Mimi's house for the aftermath. Patrick was one of the witnesses who told investigators that Rob Holman had asked if Jennifer was naked upon learning that her body had been found. But before that happened, Patrick says he was talking to the other person of interest in Jennifer's case, James Hamilton. According to a written report from the sheriff's office about Patrick's statement, Patrick said that James asked him if anyone had looked in the river while Jennifer was still missing. Considering Jennifer's body would eventually be found in the Red River, and the working theory of the case is that her killer dumped her body there, This statement from James is worth noting. With all these suspicions swirling around James Hamilton, he agreed to take a polygraph, which, as you may recall, James passed with no deception indicated. For whatever doubts investigators may have about James's possible involvement in Jennifer's death, he is the only person in the case to submit to polygraph examinations, and he's passed every single one.
Over the years, you know, James Hamilton was interviewed a number of times. And every time he was asked to interview, he cooperated. He moved to Colorado. Texas Rangers went up to Colorado and interviewed him. And I think he started to get the picture that they were trying to really see if he was a suspect. And so that started to make him nervous. But he's always cooperated and answered all the questions that were put to him.
Rob Holman, meanwhile, has never taken a polygraph examination in Jennifer's case, even though he originally stated that he'd be willing to take one if James Hamilton would do it first. This is the current Fannin County Sheriff, Mark Johnson.
It stands to reason that the person stood up and said, I will take one, and did take it. We've been told by Mr. Holman he'd take one, but he never has to this day took one and refuses to ever schedule a date to take one.
I thought that was interesting in the reports. He initially said, yes, I will take one, even agreed to a date, but then when it came down to it.
Yeah. He won't show up.
On the next episode of Final Days on Earth, the life and death of Jennifer Harris. A witness from Oklahoma contacts investigators, claiming to have seen Jennifer Harris on the Red River Bridge.
Can you recall, or tell me what you recall seeing that day when you were crossing the bridge?
Me and my mom were in the car, and my mom seen her too, and she said that girl's just going to get raped and killed. It was about 3 or 4 days later, after us being home, that we seen her picture on TV. Me and my mom both said, there she is.
If you have any information about the unsolved murder of Jennifer Harris, contact the Fannin County Sheriff's Department at 903-583-2143. Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One. This episode was written and reported by me, Claire Sanimal, and Hillary Wadsworth. Audio production by Matthew Malinger of Podcast One. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Associate producer is April Scales. Field producer is Molly McEwen. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of LucyMedia.com. Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Sanimal. Special thanks to Alyssa Harris-Wernick, Daryl Parker, and Fannin County Sheriff Mark Johnson for talking to me in this episode. If you enjoy listening to Final Days on Earth, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, and anywhere else you listen to this podcast. Thank you so much for your support.